You're listening to the Politics in Action Report at CJMQ. I'm Emily, bringing you the latest on Canadian political news. For this segment, I have some compelling discussions on the local, provincial, and the federal fronts. First, the citizens of Eastman are petitioning for a ban on Airbnbs as well. Premier Philip Couillard has officially called the provincial election, and Canada in a political dilemma with Saudi Arabia. I will begin with some news that has taken place in the Eastern Townships. Most people generally favor the services Airbnb has to offer. But for citizens of Eastman, Quebec, this is not the case. After enduring constant disturbance in the region due to rowdy clients staying at Eastman Airbnbs, residents of Eastman are petitioning to ban short-term home rentals from being offered in the town. According to residents, when attempting to reason with the renters, they are met with discontent and outrage. One community member had reported being told to get lost when attempting to confront the renters about their noise levels. This petition has been handed over to the mayor and is predicted to be voted into an official bylaw in the next municipal meeting. This is not an issue exclusive to the municipality of Eastman, as other municipalities across Canada have sought to ban short-term rentals like Airbnb. Among examples include the City of Vancouver, which negotiated a deal with Airbnb to restrict the amount of Airbnbs in the city. What this tells us is that municipalities appreciate the quiet quality to their communities. Aside from pricing, this is with reason many Canadians commute from their rural communities to work in cities daily. So the peace and quiet of rural communities is an allure of these communities alone. Some residents of Eastman are not in favor of the ban, citing government interference. This trails on the idea of what I do with my property is my business. I do realize this perspective in that Canadians do have a right to generate revenue by renting out their properties. This country has the freedom that it is purposed to guarantee such actions. At the same time, for residents who reside in this district full-time, they do have a say in terms of the well-being of their neighborhoods. As full-time residents, they have a priority, and expressing concerns about their community should be considered all year round. This debate is complex because, again, if we are to look at the other side, you could argue these clients are paying money for a service and should be able to fulfill the service to their fullest satisfaction. I do think there is a happy solution for all. For instance, booking a rental elsewhere but coming to visit the area during the day will not cause as much disturbance during the quieter hours of the evening. As well, rental seekers aren't necessarily looking for a specific location, but more so for a venue as a getaway. So, in search of these getaways, they can prevent disturbing homeowners by selecting a location that is more secluded, such as a cottage in a wooded area. There are means of getting around this issue, but this debate is more about putting regulations into writing. In other words, the legal framework surrounding short-term renting. Hence, the reasoning for Eastmaners to have petitioned their municipal government. This is a compelling dilemma for small communities like Eastman because it is such a small space to share with other civilians. I do think that people forget how powerful municipalities are because the assumption is that municipal governments are at the bottom, so they are less important. However, it is more important in the sense that this is the micro context of where we live, and these scenarios are more than likely to impact you directly. In other words, it is more localized. Consider the example of legalizing marijuana. Some municipalities have already set up restrictions where you cannot smoke the substance in public places. This decision directly affects those who consume cannabis or who plan to once it is legalized, because it dictates what they cannot do in their own communities. This also works in the alternative sense, in that community members will have a greater influence on matters in their own community. In this example with Airbnbs, this is why it is expected the petition to ban Airbnbs in Eastman will pass, because there is enough cause for concern, and community members have voiced their concerns loud enough to pressure the municipal government to pass the ban. What we can take away from this is the underestimated power of municipalities. It doesn't take long for concerned citizens to make changes in their own community for the better good. Sadly for Airbnb, this means the end of rentals in the municipality of Eastman. All eyes will be on Quebec in the next couple of months as the election campaign has officially commenced. On Saturday, Premier Philippe Couillard had officially announced the kickoff to the provincial election as set for August 23rd. While this has been cited as a long election campaign, the time length leaves for a little over a month and a half of campaigning before the set election date of October 1st. The minimum length permitted for an election campaign is 36 days, and the maximum is 39 days, which is the current length set by Philippe Couillard. Calling for the election campaign is an official gesture on part of the Premier because it means the running candidates can really start to put themselves out there and sell themselves to Quebec voters. It is also a symbolic gesture on part of the Premier for the reason that you can argue that the campaign had already begun the months prior. Recall, the months leading up to an election are the most significant because they are the most memorable to voters. What we get in election campaigns, candidates smearing each other in campaign ads and making promises, has also taken place in the past few months here in Quebec. We have had François Legault making campaign promises relative to education and families, as well as we have had seen Legault and Lisée challenging Philippe Couillard's decisions. This is why I do place emphasis on the symbolism of Couillard calling the election campaign. Couillard states his reasons for calling the election earlier so that his team can have more time to campaign and for greater debate preparation time. So that alone tells us that this decision was a strategic one. Couillard's main competitor is the CAQ's frontrunner, François Legault. And if public polls are an indication, then the Quebec Liberals have a lot more work to do if they are to defeat the CAQ in the 2018 election. The Liberals will need all the time they can to campaign against the CAQ. The calling of an election occurs at both the federal and the provincial levels of government, so we can expect the next year Justin Trudeau at some point will be calling the federal election of 2019. So what does it exactly imply? For one, campaign posters are to be hung up. I have already seen some up around the city of Sherbrooke, for example. This also means that the scheduled debates are expected to take place, including the English debate scheduled for next month. So, you may be wondering who is running in the region of Sherbrooke. I'll list off the candidates whose campaigns you will need to follow if you are looking to make a voting decision here in Sherbrooke. Sherbrooke's current provincial representative, Luc Fontaine, will be running a second term in Sherbrooke and will be representing the Quebec Liberal Party. Fontaine had achieved a great deal of experience in politics, including being a communications advisor for the Premier. As well, Fortin is currently the Minister of Families and the Minister responsible for the Estrie region. But October 1st will serve as an indication whether or not the residents of Sherbrooke feel he had served their riding well. The last provincial election, Fortin had won by a mere 2,000 votes, away from his competitor, Serge Cardin for the Pats Québécois. This year, the Pats Québécois has Guillaume Rousseau running for the Sherbrooke region. Rousseau is an associate professor in the Faculty of Law at the Université de Sherbrooke, who has experience working under the Ministry of Justice and had been a legal consultant under Pauline Marois's cabinet. Rousseau has as much experience to offer as Fortin, but it is expected if he decided to run for politics that he would not stray far from the PQ, having previously worked for the party. As for the CAQ, I haven't determined which representative will be running for the region of Sherbrooke. However, I do expect a candidate should or will be running, given it is among the larger areas of Quebec. I should note that being a recent party, the CAQ is still augmenting its membership, and in that, it doesn't have representatives running for every Quebec riding, consequently. But what I do know is that the CAQ is focused on the city of Montreal, where they had previously announced their additional candidates that will be running in Montreal ridings. This is their safe bet, because Montreal has yielded some support for the CAQ. If I am to make a prediction, it would be that the Sherbrooke region will go to Luc Fortin. I could be wrong, but based on the fact that he had already served once, there is a good chance of his re-election. As well, if the polls are any indication, the PQ, Fortin's main competitor in the region, are not as favorable as they once were, and I expect this will impact them in the Sherbrooke region as well. The 2014 election results determine that the CAQ's running candidate, Philippe Girard, had secured the third spot with 17% of the vote. Given the CAQ held the third spot in the last election, it is less likely they will swoop in and gain the region. Of course, there is a slight possibility, but I wouldn't be hopeful on this possibility. In the next coming weeks, be prepared for campaign posters and debates, as the next few weeks will be interesting here in Quebec. For my last discussion, I will be addressing news that has been much the talk of mainstream media. Canada is typically known as the country that has favorable diplomatic ties, but this year is the exception. This year, Canada's relationship to the United States is considerably rocky due to the trade dispute, and this is at no fault on Canada's part, no doubt. Now it appears Canada is in a dispute with Saudi Arabia, all caused from an exchange of tweets. All of this commenced when several arrests of social activists were made in Saudi Arabia. Once Canada heard the news, politicians were quick to denounce these actions by expressing their concern and calling for the immediate release of these activists. Saudi Arabia did not let this comment slide. It reacted, I believe, more than Canada expected it would react. Since the comments made by Canada, Saudi Arabia has expelled the Canadian ambassador to Saudi Arabia and has recalled its ambassador to Canada. Additionally, the kingdom has also taken the initiative to discontinue student scholarships to study in Canada. Some people might think that this is an overreaction to comments made by another country. According to Aurel Brown, a professor of political science and international relations at the University of Toronto, Saudi Arabia has always been hypersensitive to criticisms regarding human rights. The point Canada was trying to drive forward is that it will stand behind human rights, even if it means going against the decisions of an independent country. But the Saudi government has made it clear that it does not want Canada to speak for them or delegitimize their actions. John Baird is the former foreign affairs minister from the Harper administration in 2011 and had commented on the issue, saying the Liberal government was in the wrong to say anything at all and should be flying over to the country to apologize in person. I think this stems personal for this former foreign affairs minister, who was a cabinet minister when the Harper government had struck the arms deal with the country. His main concern is this deal and the potential consequences that could arise over this deal as a result of the current political dispute. So let's get into it. What are the implications of Saudi Arabia's actions on Canada? I want to discuss one in particular that resonates with me, because I am a student myself, and I realize how important my studies are in order to improve my standard of living. But unlike Saudi Arabian students, my status to study in Canada is definite because I have the right as a Canadian citizen. There are greater barriers to study in a country if your own country limits the possibility of doing so, which is the current case for Saudi Arabian students. Pulling Saudi international students from its universities is a cause for concern for Canada, given international tuition is a source of revenue not only for the universities, but for Canada as a whole. If you look at this from the alternative perspective, we could also see this as the Saudi government no longer granting its citizens the option to study in Canada by discontinuing funding to international students. From that, we can take away that Saudi Arabia doesn't want any international students in Canada to adopt Canadian ideals that Saudi Arabia would otherwise reject themselves. So, for whatever reason, there is an allure for Saudi Arabian citizens to study in Canada, and now that they are less capable of doing so, this will generate a movement to study in other countries, sort of like a substitution effect. So something to take away from this dispute is that we are not a democratic world. Not all countries function under a democracy. So while Canada feels it is in a position as a democratic nation to comment on the actions of another country, Saudi Arabia could be less interested in the opinion of a human rights know-it-all country such as Canada. Like any diplomatic relationship, it does take years to fabricate a good common relationship, but just takes seconds to sabotage. Canada was not the sole Western nation to upset Saudi Arabia. Back in 2015, Sweden had remarked on Saudi Arabia's human rights track record, which was anything but impressive. Saudi Arabia reacted in the same manner by recalling its ambassador to Sweden and stating how Sweden had interfered in its internal affairs. With the arms deal still in effect, Canada and Saudi Arabia will have some sort of relationship, so the way I see it, the relationship isn't wholly tarnished. There is one thing about this whole dispute that I cannot get off my mind, and it is the fact that this all played out on Twitter. I mean, how informal can you be? Now with modern technology, we are able to tweet political decisions at our fingertips and even have political spats on social media. Perhaps it makes countries easier to talk to one another, which could be a bad thing if we think about it. The moral of the story, it doesn't take much to upset the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. But does this mean countries should stay silent and not vocalize any concerns for human rights? There is no way around it. No matter the situation, countries are bound to have a political spat at some point or another. It is inevitable, and not a single country is immune. Thank you for tuning in to another segment of Politics in Action. I hope you enjoyed this discussion, and I hope to see you the next time. I'm Emily at CJMQ 88.9 FM.